that. Okay. It looks like things are happening. Up from the ground came a bubbling crude. Oil, that is. Black gold. Hall of Notes. Are you ready?
Baba Booey.
Welcome to Lyrics to Go, the podcast where we take a deep dive into lyrics that are questionable at best, but have largely dodged public ridicule until now. I'm Mark, and I'm here with Seth. How are you, Seth?
I am moving.
It's a balmy 80 degrees today here in Cape Coral, Florida. Seth has literally been in my house less than 5 minutes.
Less than 2 minutes.
Sat down, yeah. Sat down. I was trying not to be too hyperbolic, but I think you're right.
You use that word a lot.
I do.
It's okay, dude.
Please, I mean, no.
The
no,
reason
I know.
I've made a promise to myself that the next time that you say that, I was at a party. Seth was at the party, and I was there. I'm sorry to refer to myself in the third person.
Oh, I remember you telling me.
Yeah,
about this.
And I used the word once, and three people simultaneously went, "You use that word a lot." Now, Mark,
I remember who one of them was.
To be completely honest, outside of this podcast, I rarely use that word. So that told me that all three of those people listened to this podcast.
Well,
what a fine gift that
they may
was.
Have been misremembering you for me. I don't know that I've ever really heard you say it, but I know I say it.
Oh, I've used it. There's no doubt. But it was a nice gift of them to let me know that they listen, and I appreciate that. If they were trying to bring me down,
love
they didn't.
To meet a fan.
Absolutely,
love to meet a fan.
Makes me happy.
That's my funny go-to whenever someone asks for my signature on something, like when I go out to eat. Mm. Can I get your signature? I'll be like, I'd love to meet a fan.
That's your line? You know what my line is?
What's that?
That's supposed to be mine. I really ask my wife. I walk into places and see something that I like. My wife! And I look at her. When sometimes I'll come home late and I'll look at her and I'll say, that's supposed to be mine.
Two things I wanted to talk
let's
to you about.
Let's putz around instead of doing a podcast. What don't
so,
we?
So let's go. I love pulling the curtain back for the listener.
Oh, exposing yourself.
I'm
so glad when I walked in here you had pants on.
It was close. I took a shower right before you got here. We are doing two recordings today. I'll be out of town next weekend, so we're recording a little ahead of time, doing a twofer. And we don't usually do twofers. We're usually emotionally and mentally and physically replete. After finishing just one episode. So we'll see how today goes. I go,
the podcast detritus left all over the room.
I go, are you ready to do two? He goes, we got to go. We got to get.
Oh, yeah.
Seth can be a very serious guy.
Sometimes.
He comes in. He's just like, man, we got to do this.
For those that know me, I'm normally pretty silly, goofy.
Yeah.
Laid back most of the time.
But when you got a crunch, you crunch. Daddy crunches.
It's sad to see me in business mode. I don't like it.
No one likes to see Seth in business mode. Today we are talking about the song Family Man, as done by Hall & Oates.
Baba Booey.
Baba Booey.
There's a reason why I say that. I'm just going to get this out of the way. Yeah. John Oates. Looks just like Gary Delabate.
He does.
And they've said that for years. If you've ever listened to the show. I haven't listened to that show in
Big
about
teeth,
10 years.
Mustache.
Yeah, he looks just like Gary Delabate. Or Coif should I say hair. Baba Booey looks like him. So whenever anybody says Hall & Oates, I immediately think to myself, Baba Booey.
Well, that's fair. I always think of Maneater. Do you have any history with this song?
I mean, yeah, I was funny. I've always been trying to find Billboard Hot 100s from years past. I love looking at songs from long ago and how they charted, and lists of charts from times from specific weeks. I can relate to them. I can think, you know, it gives you a flavor. For a moment, you get like it's like a mustard burp. It's tangy. It pops back up in the back of your throat for a second, and then it goes away. You get the feeling of what the time was like just by looking at the songs that were on the Hot 100. And I looked at the Hot 100 today for the week that I was born.
Mm-hmm.
Totally stunned to see that in March of 1974, She's Gone by Daryl Hall and John Oates was on the charts. I didn't even know that they'd been around that long, Mark. That was wild.
A shock.
Yeah, and so it comes as no shock that Family Man, well, I've definitely heard that. I heard it on the radio. I like this song.
As a quick aside, Seth and I have been both doing the A Song a Day Challenge for the month of April, and the most recent one was 1970s. And man, I'll tell you, there were some songs I thought were from the 70s that were from the basically the late 60s. I tried to find something good in mid-70s, but a lot of stuff was from the late 60s or early 80s.
Yeah.
Bands that I was thinking of, and then I'd think of a certain song related to them, and I'd be like, nope, that's just outside the realm until I finally settled on.
What was the song that you picked?
Foreplay.
That's right.
And what's it called? What's the song after it? Been such a long,
such time,
or whatever.
Yeah.
By Foreigner.
Not terrible. It's okay. I'm okay with
Foreigner
that song.
Or Boston?
No, it's Foreigner. No, Boston. Boston. Yeah. Okay. The one that I picked was one that just skirted the 70s in 79. The reason that I picked it is because I was aware of the world in 1977, 78, and 79. And one of the earliest songs that I remember that was not gospel music, that was always on the radio, was Sailing, Take Me Away. And I instantly feel like I'm 4 years old when I hear that song.
Damn.
So, yeah. My friend Brett used to say that all the time. And I would quietly, you know, just think to myself, he's exactly right, but I'm saying it out loud now.
We're going
to
be all over the place with this episode because we're trying to cram, and I know we're trying to get business done here so we can get on to the second episode, but we have neglected to talk about, and we don't need to talk about this for a long time. I'd prefer not to.
It's important.
You came and saw Exploding Pages play.
I did.
About,
and I never mentioned
about
it.
About a month and a half ago.
To do it. It was about 3 weeks ago, yeah.
And when we were setting the set list, I love the song anyway, but we had played one show before, and Seth was like, are y'all going to do the song that we do for the podcast? And I was like, I don't know. And I kind of skirted the issue a little bit, but I mentioned it, and people were kind of lukewarm on it. And then when we were going to play another show, I said, I really want to do Steady and Sure. And Mike was down, and a couple of other people were like, yeah, okay, fine. Like, that was my hill to die on. I was like, I just want to do this on any other song we can all pick or whatever, but I'd like to do this. And the more we did it, the more everyone was like, God, I really like this song. And so we got to do it. Seth was in attendance.
I really like that song.
Me too.
I like that song.
Yeah.
It's safe to say it's my favorite Exploding Pages song. That's terrible to say because it's the one from the podcast. And it makes me kind of sad thinking that when the album first came out, I listened to it, but it didn't jump out at me as something that I really loved. But when you played it for me those almost 3 years ago, and I thought, the minute that I heard that, I know, don't shrug, don't roll your eyes. And the minute that I heard it, I was like, that's perfect.
Yeah.
It's absolutely perfect. And since that time, Jesus Christ, that's my favorite. That might be my favorite song you and him have ever done together.
Yeah, well, I mean, you definitely have it hammered in your ears week after week.
I do, but even if it hadn't have been, if you'd have brought it up for a project that we were doing that was finite, well, this one is, I'm sure.
Oh,
but
everything.
You know, that had a date on it, so to speak. It would probably be my favorite still. I really, really like that song.
I appreciate it. I'm sure Mike appreciates it.
Yeah, well,
he's the one who wrote it. So.
At the end of the song, he looked out, and I think he was trying to look for me. He knew I was there, and he went, fuck Seth Fort. No, I'm just kidding. He was like, that
Seth
one's
Fort
for Seth.
Can be my asshole.
Exactly.
Here's our next song. I do not have a history with this song, Seth. I've
at
never
all?
Heard this song before in my life.
No! Are you serious?
And the other thing I wanted to mention, we have not watched the music video.
Oh.
We jumped the gun here.
Ooh.
So I don't know if you want to take a quick...
Should we time
should,
out?
Should we take a quick
Let's
break?
Time out.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back in one moment.
Time
this
out.
Is where an ad would go if we did ads, I guess. But we'll be right back. We're going to watch this music video, and then we'll pop right back
Do
in.
You have burning, itching asshole?
Yes, I do. Oh, we should talk about that, too.
Exactly.
All right, hold on. Okay, we're back.
Wow, that video puts the song in a whole new light.
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
We will. Boom, 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 boom.
So I'll just mention it now because I'm afraid that I'm going to forget.
Well, I want to know.
There's a bass line that goes on behind some of the verses, I think specifically the last verse, that is exactly the same bass line as Hashpipe by Weezer.
It is.
I mean, it is the same fucking thing.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I know Weezer has been known to purposefully rip off stuff. Like, he's listened to chord progressions and mimicked them, you know, by playing them and then trying to forget who the artist was and stuff. So maybe that's what happened here. It might just be dumb luck, but
yeah.
So let's go through this real quick. Originally written by Mike Oldfield.
And now I got a question. Is that the same Mike Oldfield from Tubular Bells?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. All right. Yeah.
He recorded it in 1982 and it became a hit, in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year later, Hall & Oates released their version on the album H2O, a album cover with the two of them facing each other in a very heated sexual look, a heated stare. The Mike Oldfield version, I can't remember exactly how well it did, but it was, I think, you know, it hit the Hot 100 to some extent.
Well enough that I've never heard it.
Yeah, I think it was also released in England, if I remember correctly.
That would make sense, him being.
Released on Virgin Records. So it was a single twice over, probably more than that. Then the story goes that Daryl Hall heard his keyboardist playing it. I don't know if he was playing it on a stereo or if he was actually like playing the song, probably on a stereo, and was kind of like, who is this? Said he wanted a different sound for the H2O album and said, and I quote, no one will ever hear. I knew no one else would hear the song if we didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty cocky.
Yeah.
It was already was already released, was already a single, was already kind of a hit in its own right. And he's like, yeah. And I mean, don't get me wrong. He was right to an extent. Hall & Oates had a much bigger version of it. But, you know, for him to be like, if I don't touch it, no one will ever know who Mike Oldfield was.
This will only be gold under my hand.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So yeah, I'd never heard this song before. I've listened to it today more times than I care to admit and watched the music videos.
I did watch it a few times.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
There is a long version. The album version kind of prattles on for a while at the end. I think it's 5 minutes plus. And the short version that the music video that I think was in heavy rotation on MTV is 3 minutes plus.
Mm.
So not nearly as bad. Did you want to talk about the history of Hall & Oates at all?
I mean, we should mention who they are because it's they're a band that we haven't covered yet.
Sure.
So, I mean, we can do that. Hall & Oates. They're originally from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, started in 1970, and it says the years actors active were 70 to 24. Now, that doesn't come as a shock, seeing as in recently in the news, I've heard that they have had friction between both Hall and Oates.
Friction might be a little bit of an understatement,
yeah.
Seth. Daryl Hall having to take out a restraining order against John Oates. And this is not the first time it's happened between the two of them. They've had a little bit of a checkered past,
mm-hmm.
got back together, broke up, kind of like a, you know, a dysfunctional couple.
Mm-hmm.
Like all good dysfunctional couples.
Good?
Apart together.
Is that good?
Apart together. No, it's not good.
Contradiction,
it's,
Mark.
Yeah,
it's not really an oxymoron because it doesn't work. Yeah,
dysfunctional tells you everything you need to know.
Both attending Temple University, not a shock. That's the University of One Bill H. Cosby. They went there, signed to Atlantic Records, released a debut album. That was in 1970. I didn't even think they were that old, Mark. They don't seem that way to me. Put out a couple of records, 72. Like I said at the very beginning, they did this single, She's Gone. That's the first one. That was on an album called Abandoned Luncheonette.
Mm-hmm.
Strange. Song was covered by Lou Rawls and Tavares, whoever the hell that is. Went on to have bigger hits when they did later albums like Sarah Smile. I don't know if you've ever heard that one. That's kind of an unusual one.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. They did Rich Girl, was on Bigger Than Both of Us. That came out in around 77. Rich Girl's the first one that I think most that really, really put them in the public consciousness. That's the song that everyone that I know kind of refers back to, mm-hmm. other than Maneater, you know.
A lot of now that you're mentioning it, when I'm thinking of this song and Maneater and Rich Girl,
mm-hmm.
a lot of misogyny, like right on the cusp of a lot of songs about women, whether it be women that they're complaining about the woman having a tough time because you can rely on your old man's money. Maneater talking about how women go through men, or this woman goes through men really quick. This song, which is about a prostitute that won't take no for an answer, basically.
Yeah.
Strange.
I'm never put that together. That maybe a Daryl Hall has the delusion of a strong pimp hand.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but maybe I'm thinking. This is just a guess, and not really studying other lyrics to other songs. There might be a chance that Maneater might be a smidge sex positive. That could exist. I'm not sure.
Watch out, boy. She'll chew you up.
But that's one line.
It's one line. I don't know.
You know, I mean, there's a chance.
We could do it later on.
We could check. We got to check this.
We'll check.
Yeah, we
it.
Got
it. I could see how it could be doable.
But there's other songs that aren't completely, horrific. They're, for the most part, positive. Your kiss is on my list. Your kiss is on.
Oh, okay. Well,
they're not. They're. I think they're.
I need to know a little bit more context because I need to know if his kiss is on her list as well, or if he's just hunting for that kiss, it or not.
Yeah, insistent he is. You need to find out.
Yeah, what he is doing about that kiss being on his list. A couple of surprises. As soon as I put on the music video, Seth immediately started texting because that's what music videos are for. And I was like, you need to look up. And as soon as he looked up, first thing out of his mouth is, is that G.E. Smith?
Yeah.
So if you were unfamiliar with the Saturday Night Live band back in the day when Seth was a spry
35
years old, and I was 30, there used to be the lead guitarist and band leader of the Saturday Night Live band was a guy named G.E. Smith.
Mm-hmm.
An unmistakable face. He's got like a really big chin. Very, very amazing guitarist.
And excellent guitarist.
Played on that band for a long time. He served as the guitar player on this whole album. I don't know how much stuff he did with G.E. Smith, other than this album. But also, Seth pointed out correctly, Tom T-Bone Woke was also the bassist of the Saturday Night Live band and played with them for a while. I do not know.
I don't think he
The drummer, Mickey Curry, I was like, oh, well, maybe it's a 3 for 3. I can't remember the name of the drummer for the Saturday Night Live band for a while, but I remember kind of what he looked
like. It wasn't him.
It was not. No. It was a guy named Mickey Curry. But for what it's worth, Mickey Curry has also played with Cher, Tina Turner, Alice Cooper, David Bowie, Elvis Costello, Tom Waits, Jesus. Survivor, The Cult, and Steve Jones.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that the guy might know what he's doing when it comes to beats and time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Also, the saxophonist for this album has the nickname Mr. Casual.
Oh, they didn't get David Sanborn for this one?
No, David Sanborn.
Longtime SNL sit-in. Remember? I don't know if you remember it in the 80s, but they would go, featuring David Sanborn.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, but not that it matters. But
so this album, H2O, came out in 1982, October 4th, to be exact, on RCA Records, peaked at number 3 on the Billboard 200, their highest charting album. This is the album that has Maneater on it.
Mm-hmm.
The H is for all, the O is for oats, as I mentioned before.
Just real quick, take the lyrics away, take what we discussed about it. That sound of Maneater.
Oh, yeah.
Is it
yeah.
not bad as fuck?
It's cool as hell.
Yeah, I think so.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this song was released as one of their singles from this album, reached number 6 on the U.S. Hot 100 in 1983. It has some altered lyrics that we'll get to in the through the lyrics. It has a little bit of a different ending than the Mike Oldfield version, which is pretty interesting.
It's unusual.
The music video is wild. The lyrics are wild. Should we just get into it, or you got anything else to add?
Just to tell them before we start, music video, I just want to talk about it now, and then we'll kind of go into detail a little bit later on. It has this 80s, there was a sort of an 80s nostalgia for all things 50s and early 60s. It has that plasticity, that Bakelite feel, along with a lot of the graphics that you got from Mark Knopfler's Money for Nothing. Who was the band that Mark Knopfler was?
Dire Straits.
Dire Straits, yeah.
I was just talking about Dire Straits last night.
And I also want to say, I just watched a movie last night. Mark, have you ever seen Miami Connection?
No.
It is unreal. We've got to talk about this later. The guitar player in a band called Dragon Sound. That was the name of the band. In Miami Connection, looked just like John Oates. So funny you mentioned things that came up. Now, so they were a popular band, wound up doing this thing called Daryl's House that a lot of people have seen. That's really kind of cool.
Daryl's House is outstanding.
Yeah, yeah. had some issues that pop on and off all throughout the 2000s, 2010s. Daryl Hall wound up suing John Oates. Like Mark said, got a restraining order. I just read for a while. They got back together in 2017, performed, tried to milk it for a few more years. But eventually, you know, I think they are where they are. And I think at their age, which I'm sure is at this point the 70s, probably not going to turn back from the friction that develops over six decades of working together.
Who can forget the 2010s? Oh,
nostalgia for those days. Mark, they feel like yesterday. I mean, and that's not hyperbole.
A lot of people may know this song from Grand Theft Auto Vice City Stories. Was one of the songs that would pop up on the radio station.
That's awesome.
It comes right in with vocals, man. It takes no fucking time.
It's got a weird musical opening, too.
It's got a weird everything. Yeah. Yeah. So we get our first verse.
Yes, that comes from Mike Oldfield. Mm. Yeah, I just have to ask, are you familiar with Tubular Bells?
Yes.
So you know the oddity that he is.
Yeah.
How, okay. Yeah, go ahead with those lyrics, Mark.
Yeah, Tubular Bells, very good. Yeah. So we jump right in with the first verse. She had sulky smile. She took her standard pose as she presented herself. She had sultry eyes. She made it perfectly plain that she was his for a price.
My first question is, where is this taking place? Is it Is it in a house of ill repute? Or is it on the street, Mark?
I think we should try and answer this question a little bit further that we get into it, but I think a lot,
that's my first question.
I almost don't even want to talk about this verse yet because I feel it without more context, it's kind of hard to discuss, but I mean, we know what we're talking about. Hmm. I mean, well, I guess we don't fully know. We don't know at the time that, we know that she is sulky and sultry. She is presenting herself to a man. And she made it perfectly plain that she was his for a price.
I wonder how.
And, you know, I can't imagine it's in a house of ill repute, which is a anti-sex worker way of saying a brothel.
You're right. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
No. I think that it's a funny, outdated term.
That is a term from the past that I always thought was funny. Yeah.
I think hopefully listeners by now know that we are both sex positive and not anti-sex worker.
Yes.
So it is what it is. Please, you know.
That's from the past. It's just something said. It's like me calling somebody a heathen.
But
it's
I would hope that a woman wouldn't have to let it be known that she's his for a price. I mean, I guess a woman could just say, you know, even though I'm a sex worker and you're here to buy sex, I'm not going to have sex with you, maybe because you're too creepy or too gross or not my type or whatever. But I'm kind of guessing that this is out on the road. This is somewhere maybe a rest stop, or I don't know where this stuff happens. I did accidentally pick up a prostitute once. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
Okay, so I'll tell this story real quick. I'm sometimes pretty naive to stuff that's right in front of me. And I was stopping by Arby's to see my good friend Andrew Bernard, who worked there at the time. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he was there. Maybe his mom was there. I got like a sandwich or whatever. And I was leaving. There was a Howard Johnson next to the Arby's. This is in North Fort Myers.
Correct.
You're familiar with this.
Very.
And this woman was standing
just because I drove by it.
And this woman was standing out there. And I did know that this Howard Johnson was like a pay by the hour Howard Johnson. And there was a woman standing there. And I was like, you know, I think she came up to me and I was like, do you need a ride? And she said, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I thought she needed a ride.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we started driving and she was like, so what are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm going to band practice. And then she got a call on her cell phone and she's like, I got caramel skin. I'm 5'4". And I was like, immediately like, oh no.
Look what I just
did. No. So when she got off the phone, I was like, look, I'm really sorry. I think there was a misunderstanding. And she's like, it's okay. Turn here. And started bringing me back into a neighborhood. I was like, I'm going to get killed. She's going to bring me to someone's house that is going to be like, what the hell are you doing? But I just dropped her off in a neighborhood and went to band practice.
Anything to read your private live journal entry from Dear Diary.
Let me see
turns
if I can
out
find
I
it.
Like caramel
I may
skin.
Have had my I still have my live journal. Let me see if I can find it. I have a thing on my computer so I can search all my
Dear Diary. Turns out I don't have hang-ups about giving money for
it was very, very bizarre.
So the reason that I brought that up and the question of I wonder where this is taking place is because Mike Oldfield, the writer, has done a damn good job in the first verse of painting a beautiful picture for a story. And I'm thinking to myself, what more is going on here? Where is this taking place? I want to know more. It's a very good exposition to
tell
a song.
Me more.
Am I wrong, Mark?
It's
a good exposition. It's telling a good story.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely pops you in the middle of a story.
Yeah.
A sulky smile is a little bit of a weird descriptor.
It is.
Sulky, morose, bad-tempered, and resentful.
And what is a standard
refusing pose? To be cooperative or cheerful. I don't know that a sulky smile, a bad-tempered smile?
Maybe
it means it as a noun, a light two-wheeled horse-drawn vehicle for one person.
What?
Probably not, huh?
No, Her smile reminded me of a two-wheeled carriage. No, Mark, a sulky smile, I want to know why she's got a sulky smile doing what she's doing. Maybe she's not happy about what she has to do.
Maybe.
And I understand that, but what's a standard pose? Is that like hand on hip, hip out?
Yeah.
It asks a lot of questions.
Ass out, tits out, I think. Kind of like a, just highlight your features. I can't remember, there was a TV show or a movie where... There was like one sex worker talking to another that was like, you need to highlight, these certain, you got to accentuate the positives.
Shake the hair down.
Play with the hair.
Exactly. Make sure the heels make you're on the points of your
all
toes.
Those things that make us simple idiot fucking men just drool like an idiot.
It doesn't take much.
So then we get the chorus
in which
the idiot guy says, but he said, leave me alone. I'm a family man, and my bark is much worse than my bite. He said, leave me alone. I'm a family man. If you push me too far, I just might.
Why is he getting aggressive?
Well, no shit. She's pushing you hard for a reason, man.
I mean, Jesus Christ, she's just a lady trying to make a dollar, I think. I think we don't know.
Well, okay, what do you think about... What about this do you think is aggressive?
Him. He's aggressive about her. There is nothing.
Okay.
She is at this point just a very interesting mannequin in a window.
So
it's about all she is.
This to me is part of the, you asked where is this taking place? What's happening?
Right.
So this to me is kind of may or may not answer your aggression question. Because if he is going to a brothel or going to a, like the bunny ranch or something, and then he's like, leave me alone. That's dumb as hell.
Yeah.
Like, if you're in the Apple store, someone's trying to sell you a MacBook. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
If you go there, you got to expect someone to come up and be like, have you been helped?
Yes.
So that's, again, why I kind of think like, maybe he's not at a place where you'd necessarily like shop specifically for sex.
Mark, he was in the produce aisle. Would you like this peach?
Yeah. I love a good peach.
I do too.
But it has to be like a good, like I don't like hard peaches.
Same. I was just going to say
it's got to be juicy.
Soft and juicy.
I used to go up all the time to Athens to visit
Mark.
Friends. Mm-hmm. And when I would come back, I would always find like a fucking little basket of peaches they'd sell on the side of the road in Georgia.
See, like many peaches.
And I would house half of the thing by the time I made it to Florida. And I mean, fruit, when I eat a lot of fruit, it gives me the shits.
That's
probably
good.
Says something about my, is it?
That's a good thing. Yeah. Oh, good. Jesus Christ, fruit shits are the best.
Well, I'm just saying like, oh boy, it becomes an issue. But man, so juicy, just like running down my chin. Jesus.
So you're saying
Lord.
You like to get a lot of peaches in your mouth.
As many as I can get, Seth.
Absolutely.
If they're consenting peaches and they're ripe for the picking, then sure.
Soft and supple. I don't think that the guy is, I don't look at him as much of a family man as angry as he is. This is a guy, this is maybe that whole 50s, 60s, we're looking back. In my opinion, saw a lot more men that could not control their emotions back in those days. So it's fitting.
So I want to talk about one specific line here in the chorus.
Okay.
My bark is much worse than my bite. Now, the thing about that line, if you're not familiar with this age-old adage, is basically like, my mouth writes checks that my ass can't cash. I talk a bigger game. Like, I talk like I'm tough, but I can't fight. I'll talk a big game, but I won't fight, etc. So in this context, what I'm kind of getting is, he is talking up about wanting to fuck, and he's talking a big fuck game, but then she's like, all right, well, let's go. And he's like, leave me alone. So I think he's sending some mixed messages.
I think it could be talking down that line. I've always kind of interpreted it as, I'm not as dangerous as you think I am.
Well, I mean,
it could be. It could be taken that way.
Yeah, but I don't think he's.
This is the only time I'll be contrarian in this whole episode, Mark.
Here's what I'm thinking with the chorus added. Mm-hmm. And I have thoughts on this that I'm trying to kind of unveil slowly as we go instead of just being like, this is what's up. But I think that maybe we're talking about a man meets a woman at a bar and is flirting. Mm-hmm. And then she starts to be like, well, what's up? You know, for the right price, you could be with me. And then he's like, no, 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 no. Look, I was talking a big game, but I'm an idiot. I'm a family man.
I think there's preemptive conversation we don't know about.
I think maybe.
Okay.
Maybe. Mm. Maybe not. Could just be he
looks.
Saw her across the, yeah, across
like the
bar.
I like the idea of looks.
The sultry smile, or uh-huh. The sulky smile. Sulky.
Sultry eyes.
Sultry eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
Sulky smile. And that's when he's like, yo, and, you know, but him telling him, if you push me too far, I just might. I mean, that's a dumb thing to say to somebody who's trying to, like, make ends meet and put food on the table. Like, good. Now that I know that if I push you too hard, you'll give me money to have sex with me. Mm-hmm. That's what we get so far. But the story gets a little stranger with verse two.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She wore hurt surprise as she rechecked her makeup to protect herself. Dropped her price and pride. She made it totally clear that she was his for a night.
Are we to assume that the deal's gone down? That, like, they've come to a conclusion and they're moving forward?
No.
No, you don't think so?
No.
Made it totally clear that she was his for the night.
So what I'm getting here now is, I just want to fuck you.
Oh.
Like, this guy is so, so hot. Or she is, like, so into him or whatever. There's such chemistry. He says, leave me alone. And she's like, oh, what? I'm not hot enough? She checks her makeup. She's, you know, she wore hurt surprise. Like, oh, why not?
Right.
Like, you know, I've dealt with many family men. My bills are paid by family men. Why don't you want to be with me? She rechecks her makeup. And then she drops her price and she drops her pride.
Uh-huh.
So she's like, all right, I know I said $100. Let's call it 70.
Mm-hmm.
I usually don't haggle like this, but for you, I'm going to haggle. Mm-hmm. And she made it totally clear. Like, the reason I'm doing this is because I want to be yours, mm-hmm. because there's something about this guy in particular that makes her, you know, maybe she thinks he's got a big hog. Maybe she thinks, you know, he's got a strong stroke game, whatever it is. She's like, I want to be yours. And now it's almost like the tables have turned. It's like, he's the prostitute.
You make a good point, but can I go back for a second? And I am going to be contrarian for just a second. I'm not really contrarian.
You can be whatever you want to be, Seth.
Be you. Be me.
You're here. You're here to be you.
I have, maybe we'll step back for just a second and say, now she knows he's outwardly said he's a family man from the chorus, okay? So she knows that. That's been conveyed. And me, in always trying to find the worst in every situation, there is the possibility that this could be entrapment. Hear me out. she takes him. Oh, you know, now she knows he's a family man. He's got things on the line. She knows something about him. Now she can get him in a room.
Blackmail situation, now, are you talking about?
That's what I'm saying. Maybe she gets him in the room. She, while he's asleep, she looks in his wallet, maybe lifts his shit. Maybe even if he doesn't have anything in there, she can find out his name and his address. And
what are you
threaten
do?
To take the information to the wife.
I'll tell your wife.
Exactly.
Well, Jesus Christ, Seth. I mean,
that's
I,
dark, but
it
man,
is very
you know, that's
dark.
The places that I go, so.
I mean, I think she just really wants to bang him.
I mean,
you could be right. I don't know. Let's
this
read.
This song
forward.
Sounds dark to me, man.
Oh, it's a dark song. It does, for sure. Yeah. So then we get the chorus again, and the chorus doesn't change except for when it repeats at the end. But he said, "Leave me alone. I'm a family man, and my bark is much worse than my bite." He said, "Leave me alone. I'm a family man. If you push me too far, I just might." This thing bugs the hell out of me.
Yeah, it does me too. I was just gonna say that. And the solo is... Wait, the solo comes after verse 3, doesn't it? Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it comes after. Yeah, that bam, 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 bam thing that you're talking about. It's probably maybe the worst part of the song. It's just a musical bit that we can overlook, I suppose. Because it is a good song.
Yeah. Then we get verse number 3 after he rebuffs her advances again. Mm-hmm. She gave him her look. It would have worked on any other man around. He looked her up and down. She knew he couldn't decide if he should hold his ground.
I want to know why that doubt comes in there in line 2. It would have worked on any other man around. It sounds like she's making her way into those pants.
She's trying to.
I mean, it sounds like
she's
getting
like,
there.
She's
with,
like,
that...
I'm hitting him with everything I've got.
Yeah.
And this motherfucker won't budge. And, you know, it's there's a couple different, I think, takes on it. One, of course, is her pride. You know, being like, I know what it takes in my profession to make a man cave. And this guy is not caving. Even though he's saying, leave me alone, she's not leaving him alone. So that's a drag, you know.
It's a, explain
no,
that
no
drag.
No means no. Well, no mean, you know, if he says, leave me alone, I'm a family man. He is saying, it's like being like, I'm on a diet. Please don't bring cake to the table. And then someone's like, here's some cake. Oh, look, you can have some cake. And it's like, I'm telling you, please don't. And someone is like, come on, this good cake. Hey, every time I wiggle the cake like this, someone always takes a bite. It's like, don't, you know, don't try and get someone to give in if they're trying to abstain, especially if they know they're in a time of weakness.
Surprise, you're keeping it in a dark place with me, man. You really are, because
I don't, I'm,
she
well,
is
I
a
never
wicked
said
woman.
This is not a dark song,
Oh, I know.
Seth.
I'm just saying I mean, my summation of verse 2 kind of extends here in that you're right. She is just wearing him down. And can women not be aggressive and push past no means no, just like thousands of men have?
Well, and I mean,
millions of men have at this point.
And we're talking here about survival of people in the sales industry.
Oof.
Because what she is doing is sales here.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times have you heard stories of car salesmen, et cetera, who are like, I know you're saying you can't afford it, but if you just do this and just do that,
every time I
knowing
no,
that there's a chance, I mean,
you mean yes,
there's a repo industry for a reason.
Exactly.
You know, yeah, you're talking people into getting those numbers, and whether or not you make your payments is your own thing.
Oh, they'll get that car back.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't. Yeah. I mean, they're still going to have the car. It's,
exactly.
That's the crazy part.
So, you know,
it works out for them. Every time. You, not so much.
Right. So yeah. She is, even though this guy is like, hey, please stop, she's like, no, I'm not going
to
stop.
This brings up a very good question. Does he need to hold his ground? By that, I mean, does he have to stay, if hypothetically, if they're at a bar, does he have to stay on that stool?
You ask a very good question.
Exactly,
Seth.
Man.
And I mean, I think there's definitely some back and forth here.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I would argue that he shouldn't have to leave. she should just fuck off when he says you should fuck off. But, you know, I can't help but wonder if he's not throwing a little...
I don't think fuck off little is the strength of what he's saying.
Fairy dust with the, if you push too hard, I just might.
There you go.
Because it shows, you know, he's thinking with his dick. And he's trying not to.
By no, I mean maybe.
He's like, please, just whatever you do, don't call me daddy. Because that will definitely break my resolve.
Right.
It's like basically giving her the keys to the fucking,
to the
car.
Crotch.
Yeah, exactly. To that chastity belt. Yeah. So it's kind of a shitty thing all around. And the fact that she feels personally, you know, shat upon because this guy isn't giving in when any other guy would, mm-hmm. is also kind of a bummer. It's like, Like it only affects her. Like the only reason that he could say no to her is because he doesn't find her attractive, not because he's trying to be a good husband and father.
And I don't think, yeah.
I mean, that's not the case here. I mean, you know, the guy could be like, look, I know I'm fucking horny and I know that you're hot, but I'm trying to do the right thing. And she's just like, I do not give a fuck.
Could just be a tale of ribaldry.
Yeah.
Everything to the edge, but not necessarily going over it. Mark, she's a good salesman. She knows that he couldn't decide.
Saleswoman.
I'm sorry. You're right. Saleswoman. She knows that he can't decide. He can't make up his mind. And if he should hold his ground, she doesn't know. She's that's good. That means that the door is open. It's still there.
He's looking her up and down.
She's got brass balls.
He's looking at the merchandise. He's mm-hmm. You know, he sees a giant chicken leg
kicking the tires, so to speak.
Standing there, yeah. Like in the cartoons. He looks up and down and just sees a giant old hand with a bone sticking out of it.
Ugh.
And he's just salivating. All he needs is a plate of mashed potatoes. Mm. So then we get
some gravy.
Another chorus. He said, leave me alone. I'm a family man. This is now the third time he's told her. And my bark is much worse than my bite. He said, leave me alone. I'm a family man. If you push me too far, I just might. Yeah. And then we get the guitar solo, I think, here. And, you know, the guitar solo is praised by people. It's not bad.
No, it's... I expect a little bit more out of G.
And it's pretty short.
It's, you know, that could just be him in the video. Is he in the recording?
He is.
He is. Okay.
Recorded on the whole album.
Not his greatest, but it's okay.
It's a little... He's kind of threading the needle.
It's wanky.
Short, and not to get too much in the music video now, because we need a whole separate thing for that.
Yeah,
that's
next week.
he is playing this music video surrounded by young girls at a sleepover that are like sucking on their thumbs and looking up at him,
sitting on a Jackson Pollock painting.
it is very weird.
It is.
We'll talk about the music video here more in a second.
Yeah, we need to get to verse four.
So then we get to verse four. Now here, here is where we get the difference between this version and Mike Oldfield's version,
right.
how this song wraps up. So here is the fourth verse as sung from the scripture of Daryl Hall and John Oates. She turned, tossed her head. Unlike her opening move, her final exit line. He waited much too long, but by the time he got his courage up, she was gone.
What did Mike Oldfield have to say? Can you just tell me flat out? Because this is weird.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at the end of the Hall & Oates version, basically he has decided, I'm going to fuck her.
Yeah.
I give in.
This is a good story, man.
I like this story. And he looks up and she's like, okay. I mean, he hurt her feelings. He hurt her too much by not immediately saying, yeah, let me fucking put my face deep down in that puss and just go to town like it's a corn cob eating contest. And the worst metaphor for having
in the history of lyrics to go, maybe.
Yeah, in the 170-something episodes.
That's pretty bad one, Mark.
I'm just thinking about going back
and forth,
I guess.
A colonel being down there. He lost it. He lost it, Mark.
So the
door got slammed.
Yeah, the last verse of the Mike Oldfield version says, she turned, tossed her head, and then she started to make her final exit line. She showed real disdain as if explaining again she could be his for a price. So the Mike Oldfield version, they are still in the middle of negotiation.
Yeah.
There is no decision.
I like this version better. I think I like Daryl's, to be honest.
I don't like it because I don't want the guy to cave.
Really?
Yeah.
I think it's just a story, Mark.
Thank you, Seth.
Doesn't apply to you, man.
Jesus Christ. Now I just fucking woke up to the reality that this is not reality.
I know. You did. Thank God.
No. I mean, I like a story. Look, it's such a common story of guys fucking giving in to wanting to fuck. And so it's nice to have a story where the guy doesn't fucking cave to being a piece of shit and a bunch of people aren't going, see, just another fucking guy that cheats on his wife or cheats on his girlfriend.
Here's why I like it more. Beautiful loser.
Him.
Okay. Definitely him. And her being caught up in a beautiful loser situation. He has, you know, done the wrong thing throughout. And she might have caught it. Maybe the reason that she lowered her price.
What do you mean he's done the wrong thing throughout?
I think he's done the wrong thing. Even though deep down, I think that this guy wants to hook up with her. He is a piece of shit. He's a piece of shit. Okay. He probably wants to hook up with her, but something deep down is keeping him from doing it. Like, this is what I need to do. I need to let this woman, I need to draw a line. And she likes the line. She wants to cross the line. And he's just doing it because he feels like this is part of a game somehow. And he does it and he keeps drawing lines. And at some point, she's tired of it, realizes that this is a joke, and walks away. Meanwhile, he's stroking it in the hotel room a little bit later on.
But there's nothing wrong with stroking it in the hotel room. Yeah. The problem isn't jerking off thinking about somebody. I've been in relationships and thought about fucking porn actresses and people.
Ooh, no, I'm just kidding.
And that is what it is.
That
it's
is
a different
it
story
yes,
when you actually you've never fucking jerked off thinking about anybody other than Jen while you've been married.
Come on, man.
So exactly. Yeah. So I mean, like, that doesn't make him a piece of shit. Now, I mean, I get it. I do agree with you to a very slim extent that he's drawing the line and redrawing the line.
It's like emotional edging.
But like, I mean, he has told her time and time again, leave me alone. In a time of desperation. And I'll tell you, man, as, you know,
but
again,
pushing too far, he just might. It's at the end of every chorus, man.
And she has two ways to look at that.
Yeah.
One is, this guy is a family man. He is telling me that, you know, the if you push me too far, I just might. Is him telling me, I am in a bad place here, and I'm asking you to respect me as telling you that I am in a like a volatile place, to leave me alone and why. And she could take two roads here. One is she can say, okay, heard, there are other guys here, I am going to go and try and do that. The other is to keep pressing him. And the other thing that's strange to me here, Seth, and this is why I disagree with you.
Go ahead.
Because she drops her price and is like, to me, this is for her not strictly a sales thing. This is something bigger. This is like a pride thing with her or whatever. This becomes a game of cat and mouse where it's not about, I want to put you in a 4-door Honda Civic. This is, please, I feel like I've lost my edge, like I've lost my game.
I don't think so.
I've thrown everything at you. Everything that other men would have fucking immediately fallen because I've done, the lines, the looks, all the stuff where she says this would have worked on any other guy and it's not working on him. And she's going, am I losing it? Like, what's going on? And keeps pressing him and keeps pressing him.
She's wicked. She's witchy woman. She wants to come in there. She's got that Camarillo Brillo. She wants to tear him down. She wants to ruin his shit. There are people out there that get off on this shit.
Right, but what makes that bad?
That is bad.
I mean,
ruining shit for people?
I agree with you, but you're saying that he's evil.
I'm saying that there's evil coming from both sides. There is. I'm saying that he is the weakling. He is definitely the weakling. That he is the loser.
He is the weakling, and he knows it, Seth. He's saying, I am weak. Leave me alone. I'm a family man. Please leave me be. And she's saying, no.
No.
Now,
please leave me be, except there's a game. It's a game.
I see where you're coming from. I think there are a couple ways to read. If you push me too hard, I just might. I will say, it is not the smart thing to say. I will also say, I am not 100% sold on him saying that specifically because he wants her to keep pushing.
I don't know why. I mean, I think that's exactly what he's doing. It's like satiating his little ego.
Well,
it's like, oh, she's still coming on. She's still coming on. Guys like that. People like that. People are into that. And she recognizes this is a dangerous situation and she likes it.
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as the Hall & Oates version is concerned, I think it definitely gives you a little bit more, you might be right, because he eventually does cave and she's gone.
Then eventually she gets to this point where, I've seen this, guy ran his mouth too much, guy did too much, and she's like, oh, fuck this, I'm just on my way.
Yeah.
And she's probably going, I mean, to be honest, I see this woman not even working for the rest of the night. I'm tired of this shit, I'm going home.
He, on the other, really? On the Mike Oldfield version, on the other hand, we never know. I mean, it just,
yeah,
they keep kind of going back and forth, and exactly. She's just like, she's feeling disdain, and then she tries yet again. I mean, she for another time says, as if explaining again, she could be his for a price. Like, in case you are unawares, I want to suck your dick. Just name a fucking price. Like, I named a price. I dropped my price, and now I'm naming my price again.
I don't want box. I don't want bites. I just want to suck your balls.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I'm sorry.
What changes?
In the Mike Oldfield version,
yes.
She does not originally drop her price.
Okay.
Verse 2, as she rechecked her makeup to protect herself, she showed less than pride. She made it totally clear that she was his for a price. So she does not, in the Hall & Oates version, she says she dropped her price and pride.
Yeah.
So she at no point in the, and which is different
that's
to
kind
me.
Kind of a clearer picture on
it's
the,
a, it's,
yeah.
It's, that makes it a very easy, small change.
Yeah.
But at no point did she drop her price. She's just like hammering it back home. Like, hey, I told you.
I think it makes me still like the Daryl Hall and John Oates version better, man.
That's fair.
I know. I like it. I think it's a really good story and a song, man.
You have like this cuck thing about this.
Cuck. I don't think it's a cuck thing. No, I think it's more. I like the ribaldry of it. Like I said before, who's gonna cross that line? Who's gonna go? Well, neither one of them do. She winds up getting aggravated, and I'm sure to a certain degree, he's probably frustrated because his balls are telling him yes, his heart's telling him no. You're conflicted. You're gonna be conflicted after that. And what are you gonna do? You're gonna go and you're gonna rub it out and try and forget about it.
Now. The chorus repeats 4 times. This song goes on for a long time.
A little too long, yeah.
But I want to point out a couple lines that are changed here.
Okay.
Because they may very well, I mean, I think to an extent, they highlight your side a little bit. So the first chorus is just the standard one. The chorus, again, as it sang, says, he said, leave me alone. I'm a family man. And I don't think I want it tonight.
Mm, mm.
All right.
Yeah.
So, okay. Then the outro, which is basically the chorus again, says, he said, leave me alone. I'm a family man. Don't leave me alone because I got to go home.
What does that tell you, Mark?
Please leave me alone. I'm a family man. And I don't think ...
We live in a dark, dark world, Mark.
We do.
They're both bad.
I'm not saying that he is. You're playing it out as if I'm saying this guy's an angel and she's a devil, and that's not the case. I have said many times that I know that he knows that he is weak. I mean, otherwise he would just say, "No thanks," and get up and leave.
And get up and leave, exactly.
So there is obviously some thinking with his pecker
right
going on here that is very, very easy to discern. But if he said, leave me alone, I'm a family man, and she said, oh, okay, I respect that, my bad, misread it,
end of song,
we'd be good. But she doesn't.
Yeah, no.
She takes it personally.
Right.
And she like keeps hitting back. And I will say, I mean, you know, who doesn't like, I mean, well, there are people that claim they don't like it, but who doesn't like a dude? Even when gay guys hit on me, even though I'm not gay, I can live on that for a fucking month and a half.
It's definitely.
So, I mean, I agree. Sex worker being like, I'll drop my price to have sex with you. It's like, Jesus.
Well, that would make me go, that's pretty cool. I ain't doing it, obviously. But I mean, I would be like, why would she do that?
Right.
I mean, I'm going to ask both questions. Like, either am I that good, or wait a minute, is this pity? It could be either one.
It could be.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the music video for a minute.
All right.
So
I say the bulk of the blame for all of this agitation, for the friction, for the bulk of the evil. And this is a bad thing. I know I might get in trouble for this. Lives on the lady.
No. Totally. Yeah, I mean, I don't know that many people would disagree. Again, I know she's just doing her job.
Yeah.
But
she's pushing.
Kind of stinky.
She's pushing.
And I mean, I think it's stinky when someone does it. PU stinky.
Yeah.
When someone does it for, you know, trying to put someone in a house that they know they can't afford. Housing market shit where people were putting people into homes that they couldn't afford.
Yeah.
That subprime fucking mortgage shit and all that stuff. All of it equally stinky. If someone says no, you should fucking honor that and
this
move
is
the
not
fuck
the world we live in.
Three versions of the music video.
Okay, we saw one. The 5 minutes.
We did. We saw one. It was the 5.5 minute one. Yeah, the money for nothing version. When this came out, there was an MTV version. You know, the shorter version or whatever. This is from Wikipedia. The original, which uses the standard album single version of the song, features Daryl miming the song and John playing guitar in a room full of young children who are playing rambunctiously. The guitar solo features G.E. Smith performing while a group of young girls in sleep attire surround him to watch. Throughout the video, computer-animated lipstick kisses appear on screen and at one point across Daryl's face. There's also a computer-animated male and female figure to illustrate the characters of the song making eyes at each other, as seen on the single cover. So, I want to also point out...
Can't wait to see the both of us making eyes at each other on the single cover.
I also want to point out, I guess, briefly, that family... Like, I know that we're just talking about a character in a song, and you have to make him something, but... You know, the music video highlights them being around kids, but there's really no wife in this version of the music video.
Are you sure?
I'm in this version, and we'll get there. There is no wife. It is just them and a bunch of fucking kids around, as if to say, I can't fuck a prostitute because I'm surrounded by kids. You know, you see Daryl shaving and they're doing like some family stuff or whatever, keyboards, and just fucking tons of kids being shitheads. John Oates singing Family Man to kids. Like, they're singing to the kids in some points, but they're talking about prostitution. It's kind of a weird thing. Not that you can't talk to kids about prostitution. It's just, I don't know. Left a weird taste in my mouth. The second version of the video was extended to match the length of the 12-inch extended rock mix of the song and features a typical American family viewing the original version of the video on their television while each of their appearances slowly transform into looking like either Daryl or John. So the whole video is them watching that, very meta.
Okay.
Them watching, got it?
Yep.
Here we go.
Got it.
So the whole video is them watching that original music video and they all start turning into either Daryl or John.
There is a mom in this version. She brings a TV dinner to a Joe Pesci lookalike, yes, who slowly turns into John Oates, as do the kids, Daryl Hall. The mother, there is a mother, she eats a bag of what looks like popcorn while morphing into, even though they want it to be Daryl Hall, she looks more like Paul Cook from the Sex Pistols. There's one of the little kids looks like Brian Setzer. It's very weird. They bob their heads back and forth, seem to be very much enjoying this.
And then all of a sudden, for some reason, they all snap out of like having fun and they are all standing perfectly still, staring at the TV.
They turn into automatons.
It is very creepy.
It is weird.
I don't know why it happens, but all of a sudden they're all just standing there staring. This has nothing to do with the song at all, except that he's a family man. But at no point in this music video is he like, I was waiting because at one point he kind of like, his eyes kind of glaze over. And I was like, oh, he's going to imagine being the man in this song, the titular family man, that a hot woman is going to come up and approach him. And he's going to have to try and make the decision. You know, he's got this his wife here, but this woman's more attractive and he's thinking about it.
Right.
Nope. They all turn into Daryl Hall or John Oates.
Yeah.
The kids all turn into, I mean, there was either a blonde or a brunette kid and they have the appropriate haircut, et cetera.
No titular woman.
No.
Nowhere, anywhere throughout the movie.
It's just them loving Hall & Oates.
It doesn't make any sense. So
a later version, the version that we watched, Seth.
Okay.
Turned up in some places, such as the Seven Big Ones music video compilation Laserdisc, which is the extended video re-edited to match the album version of the song. This results in some strange shots as the video begins to be seen through the television of the family in the aforementioned version, yet the family is not shown. When the Seven Big Ones video compilation was released on DVD, the full extended version of the video was used. So I think that is the version
we're looking at pieces in the second one that you described, pieces of the third.
Reese's pieces.
There, yes. Glad to pick up the trail and finally catch up to it, a la E.T., but doesn't really... I think this video would grab your attention. Just from the colors, the look, for a minute you're going to say to you see as you see the little graphics that they use. They come; they're the same ones that they use in Money for Nothing. We referenced that before, so it's gonna hold your attention, especially if you were alive at the time and you hadn't seen it. I don't remember seeing that video, but there's a lot of weird going on. Like you said, the at one point he's standing in is what a black background as he floats as children. Girls are sitting there around him. It looks like a slumber party, and they're sucking their thumbs, sitting on a blanket that looks like a Jackson Pollock photo or painting, I should say. A lot of close-ups of, for some reason, there's just a lot of close-ups of John Oates. I don't know why.
Yeah,
a lot of them, like more than Daryl Hall almost.
It's definitely strange.
Bob Bowie.
Yeah, creep factor.
This is a good one. This is maybe the funnest creep factor we've done in a long time.
While you're thinking, I just wanted to pass along a suggestion from ex-guest and friend of the podcast, Tim Clark. I think that when you get a song that has a zero creep factor, you should give it a wholesome factor. It allows an opportunity to give a well-intentioned song some credibility, even if the lyrics, music, production, etc. suck. So something that maybe we can... apply here.
This has a negative five.
I mean, this is not a wholesome,
wholesome
factor.
Factor.
This is a creep factor for sure.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Man, this is a fun one because who's more creepy? I think we had discussed that the majority of the guilt, I think in this very unusual case, lies on the lady in this specific instance, you know, with the pressure. Sales. The sales, the you know, she's slapping the hood of that car. This is what's it going
to
take?
Slapping the beast.
What's it going to take me to get you in this?
Yeah,
it's
in this vagina.
Yeah,
she slaps her own vagina,
and it doesn't. The funny thing is that as much as she's pressuring, I don't think that there's enough there that like crosses a line of that like crosses a line. Definitely not of criminal, but crosses a line of. Super duper inappropriate. What did she do? Did she ever touch him? There's no indication of that. She reapplies lipstick. She maybe, you know, strikes a pose. She wears
her
high heels, gives a sulky look for whatever good that does in the sale. But no, there's not, it doesn't really, you know, cross a line other than that she's, you know, putting it out there and offering it up, you know, which isn't something that I think most guys see in a lady, you know, just somebody coming up and saying, hey, I'm at this point, I just want to do it. I'm sure that there are guys that have that happen to them. It's just never happened to me. But she hasn't, you know, crossed any criminal or super duper inappropriate lines. I mean, I guess that is kind of inappropriate. At the same time, he's kind of leading her on. He's kind of leading her on every time he says, my bark. By the way, every time I heard in this song, my bark is much worse than my bite, I picture Michael Douglas in Falling Down.
Okay.
For some reason, that's a vision that I got in my head. Just his, you know, Bible salesman look outfit. But the guy
defends.
Exactly. I will pay you 50 cents for this Coca-Cola. He, the fact that he still keeps this situation alive with the end of every chorus, leave me alone, I just might. I just might. I just might. Is now, after having discussed it, discussed this song, strikes me as I can't stand it when anybody ever gives a false sense of hope, even if it's to a horrible salesperson. I don't like that. I much rather prefer that no time is wasted and you just cut to the chase. In real life, in a song, it's different. For that, it raises the meter even higher than what I thought it was going to be, which I was going to give this a 6. I'm going to give it like a 7.5.
I'd say that's
there's creep all over.
Not a bad number.
From
yeah.
Both sides.
Yeah, I think that no matter which way you're looking at it, it's it ain't good, kids.
No.
It ain't good.
It's an interesting story though, I do have to say.
I don't know that it is.
Really?
I mean, it's interesting, I guess, so, in so much as you can sum this up. The music video we watched is 5.5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
You can sum it up much quicker by saying this prostitute keeps coming on to a guy who says stop, but doesn't seem like he really wants her to stop. And then she leaves and he's like, bummer.
That's not storytelling, Mark. That's not. That's cutting to the chase.
No. I
Ribble
know, but
Tree
it's
Mark.
Just
Ribble
I don't know. I mean, like, unlike, you know, it's funny. I was just watching a killer version. Friend of mine. I don't know if he's a friend of the podcast. Pearson, drummer of the Electric Mud, local band around here, and a couple of other bands. Very, very good drummer. Posted a little clip of Townes Van Zandt doing Poncho and Lefty. From a documentary that was done in like the 70s, I think. And man, God, the Willie Nelson, Merle Haggard, it's Nelson and Haggard, right?
Yes,
that does
it.
And the Emmylou Harris version and all those are very good, but this version is just him with a guitar. Maybe we'll watch it in between records.
It's the best.
It's so fucking good. I urge all of you, if you like country music and storytelling, he's up there with Prine, man. Just such a good fucking storyteller. I cannot tell that story as quick as I just told this story.
Right, right.
I mean, that story is a story.
Oh, that's...
Holy shit, it's so
that
good.
That song is absolutely beautiful.
I'm going to give it a... you gave it a 7.5. There's problems on both sides of the fence. This is not all him, not all her. I would say it's a little more against her, even though at first she's just trying to make a living. You know, it's a tale of hurt egos. It's a tale of loss. It's a tale of lust. 7.9.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I'm proud of you for going higher than mine. Actually.
Yeah. I mean,
it tells me that this song affected you. Yeah.
It's dastardly.
Yeah. I like this song.
Good.
I like the story. I think it's an interesting story.
I will probably never listen to the song again.
Really?
Yeah.
I will not turn it off.
If it came on, I won't turn it off.
Oh, I will. I'm happy to listen to it.
But I will not turn it on. I will not be driving on the interstate and think, God, I listen to fucking Family Man. So,
I'd have to say that 80% of the songs that we listen to, I'm not
that's
looking
fair.
For to listen.
You know, I have listened to, what's the most repeated song you think you've listened to on an episode that you heard or that like repiqued your interest because of the episode?
That's the easiest answer for me to answer in the world. It's Come On Eileen.
Oh, great.
Every time now, because you do hear that song, you run into that song. There are times that I think to myself, I want to listen to those lyrics.
That's great. That's
I
great.
Love those lyrics. They're so good.
Yeah.
And it's so insane because I went 40 years of my life thinking this song ain't that good. Those lyrics are probably shit, not paying attention to them. When we went over them and went through them with a fine tooth comb, it completely changed the whole song. It really did.
Mine is Nights on Broadway.
Oh, that's.
I had never heard it before. And once we did it, man, I couldn't get that out of my head for a while.
That is a really good
one. I still pop up on it every once in a while. In case you didn't know, by the way, we do have a it's a list that is constantly curated every once in a couple months by me of all the songs that we have done on Lyrics to Go. We've had some conversation about it on the Facebook group. So if you're not on the Facebook group and you want to hear some of the songs all in one place without hearing us fucking talk about the lyrics and not shut up, you can search for Lyrics to Go and you should be able to find that. Seth, next song
Lyrics
we're
to
gonna
go playlist,
do,
it'll pop up.
Lyrics to Go playlist. I think if you put Lyrics to Go, you'll find the playlist in the episode. Just click on the playlist, but whatever. Next up, we are going to talk about the Seven Mary 3 song Cumbersome. Seth was like, hey, this song, and I was like, yeah, fuck it, we're doing that next.
Now, do you remember what I wrote?
No.
It's a line from a movie. This sorry motherfucker right here.
Yes. Sorry. Yeah, for sure. So go ahead and listen to the Seven Mary 3 song Cumbersome. Get ready for a lot of the same thing over and over again and to want to fucking bang your head against a wall. Seth, anything you want to say before we end?
Thank you so much for listening. I appreciate every single one of you out there that has given us an email or participated online in our social media in any way, shape, or form. Last week, we got a couple of messages from the song that we did in regards to, what was that song we did? Joe talked about it. Built This City. That seemed to get a little bit more traffic on our Instagram. I loved that people gave, even if it was just, I like this song, I don't like this song, I love hearing about it. Don't hesitate to come on our Facebook.
Or come on our face.
Or come on our Instagram and just let us
come
know.
Wherever you want.
Leave that
as long
verbal,
as you come.
That text detritus, so to speak, all over. And let us know what you think. Listen to the lyrics. By all means, I was thinking about this the other day. I watched a Mystery Science Theater for the first time in a while. And at the end it says, at the beginning it says, turn down the lights. And then at the very end it says, keep watching the tapes. I think it should be part of our show. Keep paying attention to the lyrics.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening. I appreciate each and every one of you, as does Seth. Please let some people know about the podcast, et cetera, et cetera. It means a lot to us that people are still listening. Send us some ideas if you have any. lyrics2gopod@gmail.com. And go and listen to Cumbersome by Seven Mary 3. And we will be back next Monday with yet another episode of Lyrics to Go.
Somewhere between my mouth and your ears. Some words got lost, the idea wandered off.
Thanks a lot for listening. Our theme song was done by Exploding Pages. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for songs or lyrics, you can send them to lyrics2gopod@gmail.com. We'll be back here next week.